This is VOA News. I'm Alexis Strope. UN Humanitarian Aid Chief Martin Griffiths said Thursday there were promising signs that the Kerem Shalom crossing in Gaza from Israel could soon be opened to allow more humanitarian aid into Gaza. Prior to the conflict, more than 60% of the truckloads goods going into Gaza used the cross. Speaking to reporters at UN headquarters in Geneva, the UN aid chief said opening the crossing would be a big help to the humanitarian effort in Gaza.
If we get that, well, it'll be the first miracle we've seen for some weeks, but it will be a huge boost to the logistical process and logistical base of a humanitarian operation. It doesn't mean to say that it will solve the security problems that, of course, I've spoken about, but it will change the nature of humanitarian access.
Aid currently being allowed into Gaza comes through the Rafah crossing on the Egyptian border. Griffiths said both Israel and Egypt had become much more open to the idea of reviving the Kerem Shalom route. The White House said on Thursday that Israel and Hamas are not close to another deal on a new humanitarian pause in their ongoing conflict. White House National Security spokesperson John Kirby told reporters that hostages' families continue to be a, quote, terrific source of information, even as he had no news regarding their release.
We're still trying to get as much information as we can about the hostages that are being held. We have some information, as I said before, on some of the hostages because their families are talking to us, and that's been a terrific source of information and context.
A day prior, leaders of the group of seven nations called for further humanitarian pauses in the fighting between Israel and Hamas in Gaza. The leaders also called on Iran to refrain from providing support to Hamas, a U.S.-designated terrorist group, as well as Hezbollah and Houthi militants in the region. For more on these and all the stories we are covering 24 hours a day, visit voanews.com. This is VOA News. Ivy League presidents reckon were met with swift backlash to remarks on campus anti-Semitism. AP correspondent Walter Ratcliffe reports.
The presidents of Harvard, the University of Pennsylvania, and the Massachusetts Institute of Technology faced swift criticism for their responses earlier this week during a congressional hearing on anti-Semitism on college campuses. Republican and some Democratic lawmakers are rebuking them for not being strong enough in their condemnation of hate speech against Jewish students. The university presidents had testified in a five-hour-long hearing before the House Education and Workforce Committee. I'm Walter Ratliff.
Officials say a man fired a shotgun twice outside a Jewish temple in upstate New York, then said, quote, free Palestine, as he was taken into custody. Governor Kathy Hochul said no one was injured in Thursday afternoon, hours before the start of Hanukkah. Police say the shots were fired outside of Temple Israel, and a 28-year-old man is in custody. Hochul said he was a local resident. Police say the shooting is being investigated as a hate crime. The episode took place amid rising fears of anti-Semitism worldwide and fallout from Israel's intensifying war in Gaza, which faces heightened criticism because of the mounting Palestinian death toll. Russian President Vladimir Putin is moving closer to a fifth term as president after Russian parliament sets the 2024 election date. AP correspondent Karen Shamus reports.
Speaking at the Federation podium in the upper house of parliament, Russian Senator Andrei Klishas announced the Federation Council of the Russian Federation is to decide on setting the date for the presidential election on March the 17th, 2024. Members of the Federation Council, which is Russia's upper house of parliament, voted unanimously to approve a decree setting the date. Putin hasn't yet announced his intention to run again, but is widely expected to do so in the coming days, now that the date has been set. Having established tight control over Russia's political system, Putin's victory in the March election is all but assured. Prominent critics who could challenge him on the ballot are either in jail or living abroad, and most independent media have been banned. I'm Karen Shamas.
Former President Donald Trump is appealing a ruling that found he is not immune from criminal prosecution over his efforts to overturn the 2020 election. That's according to court papers filed Thursday. Lawyers for the 2024 Republican presidential primary frontrunner filed a notice of appeal indicating that they will challenge U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan's decision rejecting Trump's bid to derail the case headed to trial in Washington, D.C. in March. Trump's lawyers have asserted that he cannot face criminal charges because the action spelled out in the indictment fell within his duties as president. For more on these stories and more, visit our website 24 hours a day, voanews.com. I'm Alexis Strope, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Friday, December 8th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The West African court dismisses Niger's challenge to ECOWAS sanctions.
The issue at hand is a matter of legitimacy. They are not a legally elected government of Niger.
Europe fears a surge in African migration as Niger repeals trafficking law. Liberia's National Elections Commission confirmed the defeat of the Speaker of the House of Representatives in the October 10 election. An appeal yet again for a humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza. Sierra Leone police summon former President Ernest Bai Koroma regarding the alleged failed coup attempt on November 26.
Apparently, the police has got some questions that they want to ask the former president, and we're hoping that he will assist as well with the ongoing investigations.
And fighting gender-based violence in Sierra Leone, those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A court for the West African Regional Bloc, ECOWAS, has dismissed a lawsuit filed by Niger's transitional leaders and some corporations over sanctions imposed on Niger by ECOWAS following the July ouster of President Mohamed Bazoum. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja, Nigeria.
Last month, Niger's military leaders, along with seven corporations, asked the court to suspend the political and economic sanctions imposed on Niger following the July 26th coup d'etat. However, in its ruling on Thursday, the two-man court held that the application was inadmissible, stating that the applicants, including a government instituted by a coup, did not have standing to make a case on Niger. The court also said it suspected there was a convergence of interest between the military junta and the private entities and said the two groups were acting in their own interests. Justice Dupe Atoki delivered the judgment. She said, quote, "An entity that is a product of an unconstitutional change of government, which is not recognized by ECOWAS as a government of a member state, lacks the capacity to bring this case in which it seems to derive benefits." The judge said action and a request for provisional measures standing in the name of Niger were inadmissible, end quote. Senior military officers overthrew Niger's government July 26 and have since kept President Mohamed Bazoum in detention. After the coup, ECOWAS ordered member states to close their borders with Niger, seized government assets, and halted trade with the country. Niger depends mainly on Nigeria and the Benin Republic for the food it imports. Nigeria also supplies two-thirds of the country's electricity. All of that has been halted for months, and millions of citizens and businesses have been struggling to get by. God bless Otuburi, founder of pro-democracy group Ready to Lead Africa Initiative, says the ECOWAS court ruling is correct.
The issue at hand is a matter of legitimacy. They are not a legally elected government of Niger Republic. So there is really no case. If the case is heard and a judgment is given in favor of the junta, what it means is that there will be more military coup on the continent.
The United Nations World Food Programme estimates the number of people suffering from food insecurity in Niger has doubled to more than 6 million since the sanctions were imposed. Otuburi says ECOWAS should find a way to reduce civilian suffering.
So the issue of sanctions that have not affected more people definitely should be looked into. The people are paying the price for what the military has done.
Last week, the ECOWAS court was scheduled to issue a decision on a complaint submitted by Bazoum's lawyers, but the court failed to meet. The complaint centers on what Bazoum's lawyers call, quote, "sequestration and arbitrary detention," end quote. Experts say continued sanctions could put a strain on regional relations, especially on joint security and trade and investments. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
The European Union has voiced concern over a surge in migration flows from Africa after Niger repealed a law that had previously criminalized the transport of migrants in the country. Henry Richwell reports from London.
Agadez in Niger, a Sahara desert town that was long a hub for African migrants heading north to Libya and Algeria and onwards to Europe. But in 2015, at the height of a migrant crisis, the European Union struck an aid deal worth more than $1 billion with Niger, tied to a government crackdown on migration. Alia Fakhri is an expert on EU-Africa migration policy at the German Council on Foreign Relations.
To build its border capacity and to draft this new law that would criminalize irregular migration and its facilitation, so the worker smugglers, basically.
Some 876 suspected people traffickers were prosecuted under the law, according to the EU. But in July this year, Niger's military ousted the democratically elected president Mohamed Bazoum in a coup. The military junta leader, General Abdurahman Tchiani, announced in November that the government was repealing the 2015 migrant law and all convictions under the legislation would be quashed. The junta did not give a reason for the move. The European Union voiced fears of a new influx of migrants. EU Home Affairs Commissioner Ylva Johansson spoke to reporters in Brussels last week.
There is a huge risk that this will cause a new deaths in the desert. That's the most concerning thing, but that will also probably mean more people coming to Libya, for example, and then maybe also trying to cross the Mediterranean to the EU.
Critics say the law itself forced migrant journeys to divert to more dangerous routes through the Sahara Desert. Local media report that the repeal of the law has been welcomed in Agadez and that migrant traffickers are planning to resume operations. Analysts say its implementation had devastated the local economy. Before the law's implementation, the Nigerian army had often accompanied migrant convoys through the desert and demanded their own cut from the profits, says Fakhri.
There might be an objective to return to the pre-2015 situation where migrant smuggling created revenues for the military and for the state.
Analysts say it's not clear how quickly the migrant flows could resume, as it depends on the situation in the migrants' countries of origin and in the transit countries north of Niger. The European Union has struck deals with some North African states to clamp down on irregular migration across the Mediterranean Sea. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
The police in Sierra Leone have summoned former President Ernest Bai Koroma to report to their headquarters within 24 hours to assist in the ongoing criminal investigation into the alleged failed coup attempt on November 26. The government has said that some of the attackers were current and former bodyguards of the former president. Koroma says he's ready to support the investigation to the fullest in the name of the rule of law. He called on his supporters to remain calm. For more about the police summons, I spoke with Sierra Leone Information Minister Turner Barr.
The Sierra Leone police today issued a formal summons to the former president of Sierra Leone, Dr. Ernest Bai Koroma, inviting him to make himself present at the Criminal Investigations Department in Freetown, the headquarters. And the purpose is simple, for him to assist the police with the ongoing investigations into the failed attempted coup of November 26, 2023. Apparently, the police has got some questions that they want to ask the former president, and we're hoping that he will assist as well with the ongoing investigations.
But the former president was never a part of the November 26 armed attack.
As I said, what we're careful to do is to state what the police has done today and what the status of the ongoing investigation. Still an evolving investigation. There's been no accusations of the former president at this time. Is a summon for him to assist in the investigations, and he's already indicated in a public statement that he's looking forward to being in the city, to responding to this summon, and to answering and helping with these investigations. He said in his statement as well that he clearly condemns us all Sierra Leoneans. So he will explain, answer the questions the police will have within the confines of the rule of law. That's the important thing for us, that this investigation every conversation, every interview is being conducted strictly as our president has committed within the confines of the democratic rule of law that governs our country.
So, Minister, when we last spoke, did you say that among those arrested was someone connected to the former president?
Among those arrested were several bodyguards and former bodyguards of the former president. So there are quite a few former security-related officials, you know, his former chief security officer, one of two of his former bodyguards, in fact, one of the people that suffered fatal injury at the scene of the crime on the 26th, was a known former bodyguard of the ex-president. So that's also something we know at this time.
Chairman Bai, Sierra Leone's information minister, he was speaking with us from the capital, Freetown. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Friday, December 8th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voa.africa.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. In Liberia's October 10 presidential and legislative election, Speaker of the House of Representatives, Bobfile Chambers, was defeated by newcomer Anthony Williams. The Speaker challenged his defeat on the grounds of alleged electoral irregularities. Yesterday, Thursday, a hearing committee of the National Elections Commission denied the former Speaker's motion for lack of evidence. Representative-elect Williams tells me that he sees his victory as a win for the young people of Liberia.
Well, I'm feeling happy. I'm still satisfied and I'm still humbled by the trust and confidence reposed in me by my people of civil sovereignty in Maryland County. I owe it to them and I feel that it is a win for the young people across this country that we as young people can take all sorts of leadership to be able to deliver for our people. So I feel very much happy. I feel honored and feel blessed. And I just want to say thanks to everybody who made this happen.
So as you get ready to get to work and do the people's job, what are some of your priorities?
Well, my first priority, you know, I came from a district, which is Flippo Sorokin District number 2. My first priority is to have the peace and reconciliation in the district. I have to go back to appreciate the people for the job well done. And then I will also use our same process to reunite the district because you cannot work in heterogeneous manner in the district. After election, you know, there are a lot of wounds, there are a lot of confusion, there are a lot of, you know, misfeeling. So right after election, the first thing to do is if you want to unify the people, bring it together. Where you went wrong, you can apologize. And where they went wrong, they can apologize to you. And then when you guys have done the reconciliation and you can put on table what are those things you want to do for the district. All of the suggestions, but even your opponent, you can use them as a working tool to move forward. But basically, one of the first things on my agenda that I'm also asking people around in the diaspora and around the country is that I want to take health as my first priority in the district. Health is very much important because if our people are not healthy, they cannot vote, they cannot go anywhere. They're going to always be sick. So once we take health as a priority, it means that they can do anything they want to do for themselves. So even if they don't have money, they can sell for themselves when they're healthy. So I'm going to make sure to resuscitate the health sector in Flippo Sorokin District and Maryland County. As I move to the national legislature, I want to make sure whenever the budget appears before us, the Flippo Health Center will be high on the agenda.
Anthony, thank you so much again. It's a pleasure to speak with you and congratulations.
Thank you, James. I'm always humbled to be with you.
Anthony Williams is the newly elected member of the Liberian House of Representatives. He was speaking with us from Liberia's capital, Monrovia. In Sierra Leone, the Ministry of Gender and Children's Affairs and the Office of the First Lady have launched 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. Minister Asata Mahoy spoke to my colleague David Vandy, highlighting concrete steps taken by Sierra Leone in addressing gender-based violence.
The country has come a long way in terms of addressing gender-based violence, because we are focused on the policy or the legal framework because the Truth and Reconciliation Commission mandated government that we should pass into law the Sexual Offence Act. So in 2012, the bill was passed into Parliament, and in 2019, His Excellency the President declared a public emergency on rape and sexual violence, which was followed by the strengthening of the law. We now have a Sexual Offences Amendment Act of 2019, which is looking at stiffer penalties, including imprisonment of perpetrators. In 2020, we have what we call the Gender Equality and Women's Empowerment Policy as well. And in 2022, there is the Anti-Human Trafficking, Smuggling and Migrant Act, because all of these are also linked to sexual gender-based violence. In the same 2022, we were able to pass the Gender Equality and Women's Empowerment Act.
So talking about these recommendations from the TRC, especially the Sexual Offence Act, are the victims actually benefiting from these laws?
Certainly. This is why we have come in those laws implementation strategies. And this is why we have set up what we call the one-stop centers in each district where we do not have the Rainbow Initiative centers. The Rainbow Initiative is an organization which is also gathering data on sexual gender-based violence, domestic violence, and physical violence. So in areas where we do not have those Rainbow Initiative centers, in those districts we have established what we call the one-stop centers. Also, this is because we want the victims to access services. And mostly these one-stop centers are found in the government hospital premises. When you report, you have access to all other services within the premises of the main government hospital.
Asata Mahoy is Sierra Leone's Minister of Gender and Children's Affairs. She spoke with my colleague David Vandy. It has been exactly 2 months since Hamas militants attacked Israel and took about 240 hostages into Gaza. The fighting has escalated to almost every corner of Gaza, and the humanitarian crisis has drastically worsened. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has invoked Article 99 of the UN Charter to call for a Security Council meeting today, Friday. Julia Tuma is the spokesperson for the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, also known as UNRWA. She tells me that the situation in the Gaza Strip is moving quickly from a humanitarian crisis to a catastrophe.
Situation is moving from humanitarian crisis to a catastrophe very, very quickly, especially as the military operation in the south has resumed as of Friday morning. Hundreds of people were reported killed. At least 60,000 people have come to UNRWA shelters, which are already overcrowded. We're hosting more than 1.2 million people in these shelters, and we are overwhelmed ourselves. The latest information indicates that at least 130 of our colleagues, UNRWA colleagues, have been killed since the war began.
As you mentioned, the resumption of the latest military operation, are you able to deliver any humanitarian assistance at all?
Yes, we continue to be on the ground. We continue to deliver the very little assistance that we have. Our supplies are running out very fast also because of restrictions on the deliveries of assistance into Gaza. And so we need more supplies. But most of all, we need for this to come to an end and for a humanitarian ceasefire as soon as possible.
I'm reading here the access to water is limited. Is that the situation also?
Yes, that's right. Water is not very much available in many parts of Gaza, especially in the south. Water is anyway in short supply. And now with more people moving to the south, the resources, including water resources, are stretched to the limit.
The Israeli military had told these people to move south. So where do you think they can go now?
But that's exactly the thing. Where do people go now? They have already moved to the south. The south is now being bombed. people are moving from one area in the south to another, very, very close to the Egyptian border. People have nowhere to go. They're absolutely terrified and they have no place to go. This has got to come to an end. It is time for a long-term humanitarian ceasefire. We are asking the Israeli authorities to reopen the crossings that the United Nations used to use before the war began, so that there will be a flow, a steady flow of humanitarian supplies coming into Gaza for UNRWA to be able to respond to the huge humanitarian needs on the ground.
Julia Tuma is the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, also known as UNRWA, spokesperson. She spoke with us from Amman, Jordan. We have this humanitarian appeal from a listener in South Sudan.
Hi, Daybreak Africa. This is James Roy Majok from United States, Bantu Town, South Sudan. I'm appealing to Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu about the people who are in Gaza that are trafficked without having water, food, medication. Let peace prevail between Israel and Palestinians, and let these two countries allow cessation of humanitarian for those who are in need of humanitarian assistance in Gaza. Thanks.
A humanitarian appeal from a listener in South Sudan. It is time now for Daybreak Africa's host, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport with the annual CAF Awards. Nigeria's Victor Osimhen, Mohamed Salah of Egypt, and Ashraf Hakimi of Morocco have all been named in the 2023 CAF Player of the Year Final Three-Man List for the men category. Osimhen, who finished as the top scorer in the 2023 African Cup of Nations qualifiers, was instrumental in his club Napoli's Scudetto's success last season, winning the Golden Boot after scoring 26 goals. In the women's category, Asisat Oshoala of Nigeria, the reigning African Women's Player of the Year, alongside South Africa's Tembe Katlana and Zambia's Barbara Banda, are gunning for the women top prize. The award ceremony will take place on the 11th of December 2023 in Marrakesh, Morocco. Staying with the Confederation of African Football, the Confederation's Cup officially resumes this weekend with another dose of exciting Africa club football lined up across the continent. This weekend will see the group stages of the competition reaching the halfway mark with match day 3 as the race towards a place in the knockout stages of the competition gradually takes shape. Former champions Zamalek will play host to Angola's Sargada Esperanca in the late afternoon kickoff on Saturday, while Libyan side Abu Salam will be hoping to continue off from where they left off in last weekend's 1-0 win over Sargada Esperanca. Abu Salam play host to Guinean side SOAR in an earlier kickoff on Saturday. The Guineans are desperate for a result, having collected 0 points so far in the tough Group B. In Nigeria, Rivers United will be looking at redeeming themselves from last weekend's loss to Ghana's Dreams FC. They are up against Tunisia's club Afrikan, who are high in confidence following their 3-1 away win over Academica de Lobito in Angola. Looking at the tournament's favourites, RS Bakane, who lifted the title 2 seasons ago, they will be looking at extending their Group D lead when they play hosts to Congolese side Dabels Noir. Concluding the weekend matches, we'll see an action-packed North African derby between holders USM Alger, who will be home to Egypt's Modern Future. And out to volleyball, where the Egyptian national under-17 girls volleyball team, the Pharaohs, have won the Africa Under-17 Girls Volleyball Championships, which took place in Nigeria. In a nail-biting final match played on Thursday, the Egyptian girls secured a 3-1 victory over host Nigeria. Egypt, who played a game less than the host nation, had beaten Nigeria 3-0 and Cameroon 3-2 to qualify straight away to the finals. In golf news, the Royal and Ancient Golf Club of Scotland is set to host the inaugural Africa Amateur Championships from February 21st to 24th, 2024 at the Leopard Creek Country Club in South Africa. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, December 8th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barty, Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.